My misdiagnosis as bipolar is far from uncommon. And it makes great sense because other things that don't have a pill are much more difficult to work with. It takes time and it takes effort. It takes commitment on the part of the person. So, of course, everybody wants a pill. Yeah. Everybody wants a scientific drug-based solution.
She's bold. She's sassy. She's a woman over 50 living a life she designed on purpose with purpose. And now, here's your host of Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast, Shelley Dryman.
Welcome to this episode of Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned. My name is Shelley. I am your host for this podcast. And if you are a first-time listener, welcome. And if you've been a long-time listener of mine, thank you, thank you, thank you. I really appreciate your support. Before we get started on this episode, I want to remind you that we have a Facebook group, Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. I'll drop the link down in the show notes. We have over 1,200 amazing and beautiful women over the age of 50. So I encourage you to join us for support, motivation, and a ton of resources to make this phase of your life the absolute best it can be. My interview with Ann has four parts. And it was truly an amazing interview because Ann is very vulnerable and talks about her journey at a time where she was misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder and almost died of lithium poisoning. This led her on a 5-year journey to wellness. And she tells her story in this 4-part series. And she also teaches us how to advocate for ourselves with the medical profession. So I encourage you to look down in the show notes where Ann has given us so many resources to use. And if you find that any one of these 4 episodes is beneficial to someone, please share it. I would really appreciate it. All right, on to my interview with Ann.
My misdiagnosis as bipolar is far from uncommon. And it makes great sense because other things that don't have a pill are much more difficult to work with. It takes time and it takes effort. It takes commitment on the part of the person. So, of course, everybody wants a pill. Yeah. Everybody wants a medical or scientific drug-based solution. I still remember it was like one of those weird moments where everything sort of felt like it went, just stopped. Just like, wait, what? And sort of a feeling of like, but no, you know, all of this, you know what I mean? It's like I'm using a walker, you know? And he explained it to me. And when you're on lithium, they start you out, when you first start on it, they do a blood draw and they measure your levels. You're supposed to have regular blood draws to measure the lithium levels. That is not always even a guaranteed indicator of what's going on because you have to observe the symptoms of the person. I saw that psychiatrist through these years every couple months, and he never once ordered a blood draw. It hadn't been but maybe a couple months before that I had asked him about a blood draw for lithium, and he did one. And they called me, and they did seem a little nervous. They're like, yeah, cut that back to this. And it was like, okay. So that happened. He said, so basically, the drug that they'd been giving me was slowly killing me. It was poisoning me. And one of the things that really sucks about this is you can't just stop taking it.
Right.
Because it would be way too huge a shock for your everything. So they started with the titration off of that. And if I can tell you how heinous being poisoned by lithium is, going off lithium is pretty darn terrible. Luckily, it's a pretty vague time of my life. A lot was going on, a lot even more than I realized at the time, beyond even being poisoned by the lithium. And so that was pretty horrible. That was in October of 2014. So I started titrating off. And the problem was, too, during this time, the depression, the hopelessness really never let up. It's just the physical symptoms started to kind of edge everything out because that was became the center stage. I was almost as afraid of getting well as I was of dying because at this point, I felt like, oh, that's hard. What's left of my life? And so, yeah, So I was in a very conflicted place. And I didn't really, I had started backing up my Xanax. I was taking it sooner than I was supposed to. I was taking more than I was actually supposed to. And that was how I was kind of just powering through everything, was just numbing myself out with Xanax. So I start titrating off, and it's a terrible process. And right before Thanksgiving, there's a whole other element to the story, and that's my relationship with my family that is highly dysfunctional. And right before then, I had asked my dad for some money because although I didn't have much of anything, my father has quite a bit of everything. And he has another family now, and he's not a part of my life at this point, but and then he still somewhat was. And I had asked him if he could help me out. And this was a scenario that had played out certainly before. It was nothing new, but I was in a pretty bad place. And so he said, well, what are you thinking? That was usually his response. And I said something, I guess, kind of offhand or whatever. And he called me. And like I said, it's not that I hadn't been through this before, but he basically, he accused me of not really being sick. He said the things he'd love to say, like, was I ever going to get my life together? What did I have to do? You know, and, I mean, it was like I hadn't almost just died. Like his doctor hadn't just told me I almost died. You know what I mean? It was hideous. And I'd been through it before, like I said, but I was never in the shape and I was already so hopeless.
Yeah.
So I hung up from him and said, you don't have to ever worry about helping me again. You know, just whatever, you know, and I was in a bad place. And then I didn't go to Thanksgiving with my family. I was still just way too sick and I'd missed several Thanksgivings. We usually go to my sister's house. And then the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, the irony's not lost on me. I said to my mom, the therapist, that I was going to kill myself. And she said, no, you're not. And she left the house. And so I started taking Vicodin and Xanax, and I would go to sleep and I'd wake up and I'd take some more. And then I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up. So it wasn't like I sat down with a bottle of wine and swallowed a bottle of Xanax, but I that was my plan. Uh-huh. Now, this all gets really fuzzy for me because of the amount of drugs in my system and what happened, but it involved an ambulance ride to ER, and then I got to go to a mental health facility. As I said when I started this, all of this needed to happen. All of this had to get this bad to finally deal with the stuff I truly do believe. It would have been nicer had it been an easier route, and it would be really nice if I could say, and this is where it all turned around and it got better. Unfortunately, it was a really, really bad experience. I will jokingly refer to it as being on the inside, but I went in on a Friday and they say things to you like, oh, it's bad to go in on a weekend because there's nobody around. Now, I can't imagine if you had a stroke and went to the hospital on a Friday, they would ever say to you, oh, it's a bad time to have a stroke. Nobody's around here, you know?
Yeah.
Just hang out till Monday. So what's really terrible is that it was sort of like I woke up there because, I mean, granted, I was cognizant going through all of this, but I was, you know, whacked out.
Yeah.
So I wake up basically, and I didn't know why, and it would take a long time and a lot of therapy to figure out why. I wanted the holy F out of that place. I wanted to leave. I was just like, no, you know. And like I said, I didn't understand, but the doctor there then, and they'd warned me about him and I'm like, great. And at this point, I didn't even know, I didn't know anything about this. And my mom said, what they'll do is they'll keep you there for a couple days and then they'll release you to partial, they call it. And that's where you come in during the day, go to a lot, all kinds of groups and you go home and sleep at night. And she's like, so you'll be out. So I see the doctor and he's not agreeing with that. And he said, I'm putting you on Seroquel, which believe it or not, I think the only reason he picked that is I'd never been on it. It was like, oh my God. Okay, why not? Since nothing else worked, let's just try a different pill. Okay, great. Seroquel, new one on me. And he had me on an antidepressant, probably a mood stabilizer too, you know, same shit, different doctor. So he puts me on the Seroquel, and I'm not sleeping. I'm still just And the biggest, one of the biggest problems is they completely took me off the Xanax. And nobody, including myself, had put together that I had developed a nice dependency on the Xanax.
Yeah.
And they say going off Xanax cold turkey is like going off heroin. And by God, I don't ever want to go off heroin if it's anything like going off Xanax cold turkey like that. It would have been much better if someone had been sensitive. It would have been much better if someone had just talked to me. Nobody talked to me. I mean, it was just, it was, again, it just felt like this series of medical bad luck for me. It was like, here I am in another situation where, and my caseworker was on vacation. So they assigned me a substitute caseworker. Now, I've never met my caseworker. She's assigned while on vacation. And so I get a substitute caseworker who, you know, and it's fine. She's 23. You know, she's just out of grad school or whatever. And she's fine. She's helping me because I did a 3-day voluntary. They let me do that at the hospital, which they will usually let you do if you'll go along that to start with because it's much easier than involuntary.
Yeah.
And so she's all fine with me going home after my 3-day voluntary. She's filling out the paperwork and everything. So I go into the doctor. He's not. And he's like, no, you tried to kill yourself. If you leave and you kill yourself, it's on me. And I'm like, I'm not. And all my story immediately was, I didn't mean it. I never meant it. That was nothing. Don't believe me. It was nothing. And he's like, no. He's like, I'll see you tomorrow. So it's like, crap. So my mom, once again, she cooks up this plan of tell him your mom's a therapist. You'll go home to be with her, and then you can come in for partial. So he had no interest in that. So now, honestly, if this had been handled differently, he was right. He was right. I needed help. I wasn't getting any help, but he wasn't wrong in that. How he did this, though, was really wrong. So I go in third day, and he says, if you sign yourself out of here, I'll get a 2-week order and keep you here involuntarily for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand it at that point, like I said, what was going on, but something in me snapped when he said that. And it, I didn't know what it awoke, but all of a sudden I became broken and I would have done anything he said. I don't know how you could ever think with people in such a vulnerable place that threats are a way to make things happen, but that's what he did. And I mean, I could, there's so much more to what went on with him, but I said, okay, I won't sign it. And so then every day he said, you have to start sleeping. You have to do this. And I'm like, okay. And I mean, then I'm like trying to be best patient ever. They every 15 minutes, somebody is trying to find you and make sure you're okay and checking your name off all the time. Through the night, they come in, shine a flashlight, check your name off that you're there. I'm trying to be perfect patient, you know, and get me the hell out of here. Every day, he just kept putting me off. And so finally, on Wednesday, he said, if you get some sleep, if he said, if you start sleeping, you can go home Friday and come back for partial on Monday and do a weekend partial. So I've got some hope of getting out of there because that's all I care about at this point is getting out of there. Taking the Seroquel, I'm not sleeping though. And I went through a dark night and it was the withdrawal from the Xanax and I would later find out something else. And it was something. So I get through that. On the Friday, I'm going to go. And he says, if you don't show up for partial, I will come and get you. I'll put you in here and keep you in here for 2 weeks against your will. Now, I don't have any clue at this point that partial is voluntary. That's, no one ever told me that. And I'm like, oh, I'll be there. So, of course, I am panicked. And I get there. Every day I had to see him at partial. Every day he said to me, if you don't show up tomorrow, I will come and get you and put you in here for 2 weeks. So I finished my week. And this part, this is where the universe starts to work in my favor. Finally, they assigned me another psychiatrist and a therapist for when I left. This is just standard operating procedure in this kind of situation. And he said to me, don't go to him. He said, you don't go to him. He'll just change all your meds again. You just come see me. And of course, I'm like, okay, whatever. So he said, and don't see, I don't know who this is. He said, see this person. She's in my office. So I'm like, okay. So she's in a group. And I go to this group. And she said, do you know who I am? And I said, no. And she said, when you and your ex-husband and split up, he stayed at my house. And I'm like, oh, well, then it wouldn't be good for you to be my therapist. And honestly, I knew it. I knew it wasn't good. I knew it wasn't right. So I kept that other therapist that they assigned me. And there was when the universe finally gave me a break. So, but I did sign up for him as my psychiatrist. So when I left Herschel, you know what he said to me? If you don't show up for your appointment, I'll come get you. And you can say, oh, yeah, that's a great story, whatever. If people don't believe, whatever. A friend of mine whose son was in the same hospital, he threatened him with 30 days if he didn't sign a release or something. So this is totally his MO. And yes, I filed a complaint. And do you know what they do? They say, you're crazy. He's a doctor and you're crazy. So that's how it goes. So that got me out in the middle of December. And I don't know if this is kind of a, probably, well, I was at that point, I was in complete denial because it was almost felt like I needed so much help. I still wasn't getting help and I was almost being punished for what I had done. So that was a pretty terrible feeling for that after everything I'd been through. Yeah. But it was also the rock bottom. I think it's J.K. Rowling who says, rock bottom was a solid foundation on which I rebuilt my life. And that really, like I said, had not all this happened. Spoiler alert, I'm not bipolar. That's a big part of this.
I'm just horrified for you. I don't even know if that's a strong enough word, but you know, I knew before that you were misdiagnosed, but then when you just said, you know, spoiler alert, I didn't have bipolar. And you went through a whole horrendous, what, 3 years? 3 or 4 years of
3 years, yeah. Actually, and you know what? It's been another 4 years of recovery, both physical and emotional and healing. But that's, you see, and that is the upside of this. There is a healing part of the story. There is the next part. It was not easy. Oh my God, to say it wasn't easy is crazy. Oh, and let me tell you, that is the Reader's Digest version. There is much more. What I learned about our medical society or medical establishment in this country and the way we treat women, especially women in middle age and beyond, is just pretty deplorable.
That might be a good third episode.
Hey,
seriously.
And I can tell you, my misdiagnosis as bipolar is far from uncommon. And it makes great sense because other things that don't have a pill are much more difficult to work with. It takes time and it takes effort. It takes commitment on the part of the person. So, of course, everybody wants a pill. Yeah. Everybody wants a medical or scientific drug-based solution. And the pharmaceutical companies really want a drug-based
solution. Well, that's what we've been told. You know.
Yes. And granted, I mean, because if you think about it, so many people now, you hear, oh, they're bipolar. That used to be a pretty rare ailment. And it was pretty clear. And now they keep easing the guidelines on it because they got all these great drugs. They got all these great drugs that they can just keep trying. And the damage that those drugs can do, and especially I firmly believe this happened because I didn't need those drugs. That's why they'd make me worse. When you're taking a cure for something you don't have,
right,
with drugs that they have found off-label uses for.
I think that'd be like me taking chemo and I don't have cancer.
Exactly. Well, and honestly, I mean, when people go through chemo, I mean, it's not an altogether different experience than what I went through because it's basically you're being poisoned. You're controlled.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And so I do have some, you know, understanding of what that is like when your body is going through that. It's pretty terrible. And so, I mean, let it be that I never have to find out what full-on chemo is like, but poisoning is a pretty terrible state to be in. I can tell you that. So
it sounds like it did a number on you for sure.
Yeah.
That's, oh my goodness. So seriously, I think it could be three parts. Like we could do this one, do your recovery, and then talk about advocating and just whatever you have found out. You want to do that?
I would love that because that's the part. Number one, I want people to know there is hope. And I want people to know this is hard, that it's not easy. But people want easy fixes. People want easy answers.
Oh.
It's human nature. That's what we want. If, like I said, I went along with so much of this because it's like, can you make me feel better? I will take your pills. if you tell me that you can make me feel better, I'll take it. What I had to go through to actually finally get through this stuff and heal, it was a long and difficult process. And I was super committed. But I also think the more we can talk about it, the more I can talk to people about this and they can know that there is hope and it's worth it. I guess that's what it comes to. It's worth it. So,
well, that's a good attitude to have.
Yeah, that's on my good days. Yeah, sometimes I feel.
Yeah. It's really a horrible story, but it's, I mean, you've got to do something with it, right?
I know. And this is my first time really trying to, I mean, people know parts of it and I tell little bits of it, but to actually sit down and tell it, it's new to me. So, but it's, I know it's time and I know this is what I have to do. So.
Oh, I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for joining Shelley today on Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast. Be sure to join the ever-growing community of like-minded women on Facebook. That's the Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned Facebook group. Join today.